Talk is holographic description of cosmological singularity. I will, here is the outline of my talk. So I'll start from introduction, where I will basically review previous work done by other people. And then I will discuss the dual conformal field theory, what is happening in the bulk. In particular, I will mention some known results about this conformal field theory because it was studied actually long time ago. And then I will show that this model has interesting solutions, which we call instantons. And each such instanton breaks spontaneously scale invariants, and I will demonstrate it explicitly. So, of course, the main motivation why to study this field theory is because it will be dual to the cosmological singularity in the bulk. And finally, I will end with the generating functional. I will show how to sum over all these instantons, because all these instantons at the end of the day will have the same action. Therefore, you have to sum over all of them. And I will end with the two-point function computation and conclusions. So let me start from general comments. So it doesn't matter if you like or do not like ADS-CFT. It is clearly a very nice theoretical framework to study various theoretical some fundamental problems, in particular Big Bang singularity. But of course, there is a caveat that ADS cosmology is not realistic, and it possesses negative cosmological constant and negative space curvature. And in principle, dual field theory is only tractable in a big gauge coupling regime. So, but nevertheless, the methods that we can develop or in the ADS-CFT framework constitute significant step towards tackling these fundamental conundrums. So let me start. So let me now review some previous works in the subject. So the simplest, but well, I put it in quotient mark because it is, of course, not simple at all. But still, it is best defined theoretical framework for holographic 4D cosmology is the M theory in asymptotically ADS space. And, and it can be shown in particular that in low energy limit, it can be self-consistently truncated to something very simple, just Einstein-Hilbert action and coupled to scalar field. So all the rest you can set just to zero. So the first thing to note about this truncation is that the mass of the scalar field is negative, but this is of course not a problem as long as it is above BF bound. So in this case, it is minus 2, so it's above BF bound, and this means that ADS space is perturbatively stable. However, the potential is clearly unbounded from below. So even if we sit in the ADS here, in the ADS space, there are non-perturbative effects, a la Coleman de Lucia bubbles, that may that corresponds to the tunneling from this ADS space to singularity. So you can find all this, so it was found, it was investigated by this group of people. So in particular, there was found this, I mean, you can find these solutions by the standard techniques. You just impose this spherically symmetric ansatz for your bulk, and then you can, you solve a system of equations. I mean, the equation for B, Friedmann equations, and coupled to the scalar field. So asymptotically, what we will have, B, this B will behave, behave exponentially, so it just corresponds to the ADS space, while phi has this asymptotic expansion. And alpha and beta are boundary conditions. So So let me conclude here. So non-supersymmetric. So I mean non-supersymmetric because it is clear that this truncation is not supersymmetric. So non-supersymmetric, but still asymptotically ADS boundary conditions allow for interesting big crunch cosmologies. Of course, when we find this solution in Euclidean space and then analytically continue it to Lorentzian signature, what we will have, a bubble that outside the bubble we have the ADS space. Of course, the bubble will be 031 invariant after analytic continuation, but in Euclidean space it will be just 04 invariant by construction. And inside the bubble, by construction, again we have FRW cosmology, and because of unboundedness, it will crunch to singularity. Okay. So, and it is interesting to understand what happens, I mean, to understand this dynamics in the bulk from the field theory perspective. Now, on the field theory side, the scalar field will be dual to operator of scaling dimension one. And by the standard ADS-CFT dictionary, alpha and beta, these are two boundary conditions. So alpha will be related to the expectation value of the of this operator, while beta, in general, it depends, of course, what you want to study. So here I stick to a particular example that was studied by Hertog and Horowitz, where they deform the conformal field theory by triple trace deformation. So if you, and then beta will be related to just derivative of the action with respect to alpha. If you replace this O by alpha cubed and you take the derivative, you get alpha squared. So this is triple trace deformation. What is nice about this triple trace deformation? Because first of all, it preserves all, asymptotically it preserves all ADS symmetries. This is one. And second, of course, because, I mean, this fact that it preserves all asymptotic symmetries of ADS space is encoded in this triple trace deformation, which has basically dimensionless coupling F. So it's marginal deformation of the boundary theory. Now, because O has dimension one, it corresponds on the boundary. This is a three-dimensional boundary, so the scalar field has dimension half. Therefore, O it corresponds just to the mass of this field and of the scalar field. So on the boundary, we have the scalar field, or the dual theory is the ABGM theory, and the scalar field is just is given by this Y. It's a matrix valued field, and O is roughly proportional to trace, single trace of this Y dagger Y. And you can arrange this combination into a vector field squared. If you just think about, since Y is in the fundamental, bifundamental representation of the gauge group on the boundary theory, so you can, so this is n by n complex matrix, so it has 2n square entries or scalar, real scalars, so you can arrange this 2n square real scalars in a vector field, and this trace will correspond just to phi square, of course, from this perspective. So this actually summarizes what I have said, that the cosmological dual will correspond to the marginal triple trace deformation of ABJM theory, and in the weak gauge coupling regime, or actually if you set gauge coupling exactly to zero, so the gauge field decouples, the potential also, the potential in the ABGM theory becomes just zero. There is no potential. So what you end up with just the scalar field and triple trace deformation. This is what you get actually in the weak gauge coupling. Of course, it requires some justification why we want to study the weak gauge coupling regime if in the bulk, of course, the dual to the bulk is strongly coupled field theory. So the motivation is as follows. Since when the system evolves and actually approaches the singularity, of course, the ADS or supergravity description is not valid anymore. In particular, we have to introduce stringy correction. And if we are sufficiently close to the singularity, then basically we have to do full string theory computation. And if the singularity is cured by stringy correction, then to see it, it's very difficult to evaluate it in the bulk, but to see it in the boundary, we have to consider, of course, weak gauge coupling regime, or to see what happens in the weak gauge coupling limit. Sorry, I do not hear.
Small
terms of function. Okay, so of course.
At which point we would expect probably an order one coupling, not small, right?
The gauge coupling, you mean?
Yeah.
You see, of course, in principle, you have to consider, of course, at the end, I mean, to get the full picture, you have to consider also, you have to introduce gauge coupling correction, so go in the direction of strong coupling. But as a first step, it is enough to consider. To see that everything is fine or everything is well defined in the regime when you take gauge coupling strictly zero.
Okay, so that's the perspective
you're taking. Okay. So therefore we have to study this simple model. ON vector model and analyze how it behaves. to mimic what is happening in the bulk, we consider it's a Euclidean regime. So this is Euclidean action. To analyze it, well, the standard way to do it is to introduce auxiliary field to replace the nonlinear interaction by something simple. So actually to make the action quadratic in the scalar field phi. So we introduce these two auxiliary fields, S and rho. Of course, let me do this trivial digression and explain that these two models are completely equivalent. Classical, it is obvious. You just take this is something standard, right? We take we vary this action with respect to phi, rho, and S. We get some equations of motion. And if we combine them, we get the classical equation of motion that we get from the original action. But there is also certainly quantum equivalence. So of course, if we think about S as pure imaginary, then this is nothing but the path integral over S will be just the delta functional. And so if we integrate over rho, then we have to just substitute rho equals phi square and we get back to this action. But we do not have to stick to this particular contour for S and rho. For the following reason, if we just take this formal expression for imaginary S, this is just a delta functional, integral of delta function, so this is just one. But we can treat it formally for any particular contour S and rho. And then by doing this simple manipulations, for instance, if we vary I with respect to phi, this is the same as taking derivative with respect to S of this action, but then you can integrate by parts. And replace it by derivative with respect to rho. So by doing this simple manipulations, you can argue that this formal expression satisfies this differential equation, and there is one solution up to constant phi cube. Okay, so here phi should be just replaced by phi square. So therefore, if we introduce this integral into the path integral. Okay, we just take this expression and introduce it into the path integral. And the contour for rho and s is such that the whole path integral converges, then any contour such that the whole path integral converges, then after integrating rho and s, we get back to the original path integral over phi. Okay, therefore, okay, so rho and s are auxiliary fields, and at the end, the contours of integration for the auxiliary fields are chosen to ensure that the path integral converges, okay, at the end. And we will specify what is the contour at the very end. Okay, so, so this is the action. Of course, the action is Gaussian and phi, and phi can be integrated out. So at the end, the generating functional will be given just by path integral over S and rho of this effective action. So the effective action has this non-local functional determinant and some rho cube, which comes from here, and the cross term S rho. So this is what we get for the generating functional. And what is nice about this trick is that now we have this n in front of the action, and n is supposed to be large. We take n to be large, of course. Therefore, we can now use saddle point approximation. So, and the path integral, we just need to vary this effective action with respect to S and rho, and we get two equations. So this equation, it has very simple interpretation. It basically states that we have to evaluate rho bar. We have to find Green's function for the scalar field with mass as conformal mass plus some correction S bar, and take the limit of coincident points. So this is like computing a loop. So of course, since this model is supposed to be dual to something that bad in the bulk, we have to observe the same bad thing in the field theory side. So therefore, let me just review this bad thing about the field theory that was observed long time ago by lots of people. So it was studied actually more than 30 years ago. So at that time, they considered simplest background, flat space background. So in flat space, it is of course very easy to evaluate this rho bar for constant now, for Lorentz invariant rho bar and S bar. So this is just this simple loop integral. And after evaluating this loop integral, you can, of course, both evaluate rho bar and S bar. This cutoff or this divergence should not is not worrisome at all, because we can eliminate it by introducing counter terms associated with mass or with the quartic coupling. Or instead, we can use dimensional regularizations, and we do not get this cutoff dependence at all. So. So these two saddle point equations, they correspond to the minimum of the effective action, which is also easy to evaluate. We just take the action, and to leading order, the effective potential is given just by the effective action on these solutions. So this is the shape of the effective action. And it is clear from this structure that if G6 is less than 16 pi squared, then the effective action actually is bounded from below, and there is one unique solution, zero mass, or in other words, conformal field theory. Now, once G6, if we approach G6 equals 16 pi squared, then the effective potential becomes completely flat, and therefore any solution, you can pick any solution for the mass. So this situation corresponds to spontaneously broken scale invariance. However, if G6 is greater than 16 pi squared, then the effective potential bends down, so it is not bounded from below. Of course, you might say, let us keep G6 in this range between 16 pi squared, and in fact, the G6 should be greater than zero because of classical instability, otherwise the potential is unstable. So you can say, okay, let us restrict the coupling constant to C to live in this regime, in this range. However, you can evaluate 1 over n corrections to the effective potential. And then what you find that there is non-trivial beta function. And this non-trivial beta function has UV fixed point at 192. And this 192 is greater than 16 pi squared. So even if you start in the range of stability, then because of the non-trivial beta function, you gradually flow into the regime when the potential is unstable and the theory is actually sick. Okay. So that actually at that time the conclusion was that the theory makes no sense.
Does the theory come unstable in the UV or in the IR?
In the UV. here because this is UV fixed point. This is, yeah, this is large field instability. Yes. Okay. So let us now see, of course, by putting the theory on a sphere, this is what we want to consider because, well, the sphere, maybe I forgot to mention it, but we choose a sphere because in the bulk, when we solve, find these bubbles in the bulk, we choose this O4 invariant ansatz. And therefore, the natural boundary for the AGS space is sphere. Okay. So, of course, by putting a theory on a sphere, will not cure instability, because instability is UV effect, and therefore curvature is not relevant at all. So, therefore, if we compute, I will show the graph in a moment. If we compute effective potential, it will be still unstable. Now, but what is nice about this saddle point equation is that they manifestly Weyl invariant. Well, Weyl invariance is, of this equation is absolutely clear because if you just take S two fields, so S has dimension of mass square, rho has dimension of correlator, so it has dimension of mass, and you just plug in Weyl factors, they will cancel on both sides. So it is Weyl invariant. Now, Weyl invariance of this equation is a little bit less clear because, well, without S bar, it is obvious because then we have just a correlator of conformally coupled scalar in the limit of coincident points. And again, it transforms covariantly. Therefore, if you have, if you Weyl rescale, you will get Weyl factor omega, say. If you Weyl rescale the metric, G goes to omega square G. So you will get omega on the left hand side, but you will get also omega on the right hand side and they will cancel. So therefore, this S bar is supposed to, well, may indicate that this Weyl invariance is spoiled. However, this is not the case because S bar is not constant. Usually, if S bar is just fixed mass, then of course Weyl invariance is not there. But if you consider a conformally coupled scalar and add mass that transforms covariantly with Weyl rescaling, then the theory is still Weyl invariant. And this is exactly our case. So, these gap equations are manifestly Weyl invariant. And this, in particular, allows construction of the instantons. So, because in general, to find the solution for some non-trivial S bar, I mean, some function, if you replace here with some space-dependent function, then it is completely, well, it is not doable so much. But here we have this Weyl invariance, which that we can exploit and get these solutions. So what? So to do it, we first solve these gap equations for constant S bar and rho bar. So we take some sphere S3 of some fixed radius A. We compute effective potential that corresponds to constant S bar and rho bar. So this will be the shape of the effective potential. It will be unbounded, of course, for large S bar because if S bar is large, so everything looks more or less like flat space. But we will have also this bump because of conformal coupling. Because of conformal mass. And therefore, we can find this constant solution, which corresponds to the maximum here, okay, to the maximum of the effective potential. Now, once you have this constant solution, of course, if you do Weyl transformation, it will still be a solution because the gap equations are manifestly Weyl invariant. So what we do, we take this constant on a fixed sphere, on a sphere of fixed radius A, we stereographically map it to flat space and then stereographically map it back onto some given sphere of radius R naught. Okay. So you just take this constant and apply Weyl transformation. So this Weyl transformation from sphere of radius A to a sphere of radius R naught. Of course, varying this A. Taking various values of A, you will get a whole bunch of solutions that are sitting on the same sphere of radius R naught. All of them will solve, of course, the gap equations. And this is actually the final form of this solution. So this S bar A is just this constant on a sphere of radius A. And then you have extra factor because of Weyl transformation. Okay, here eta is just some vector on a sphere on S3. Okay, and u points to the center of the instanton. Okay, of course, all these instantons will have the same Euclidean action. Okay. So let us first of all examine this the properties of this instanton. Okay. So first thing to observe is that if you take a given instanton on a sphere of radius R0 now and just replace u by minus u and a, you rescale a, you replace it by R0 square over a, then nothing, the instanton is unchanged. So this is exactly the same instanton. So in other words, if you consider fixed u and you vary a from 0 to infinity, you both you recover a family of instantons that are sitting at u, but you also cover the family of instantons that are sitting at minus u. So to avoid this sort of double counting, when we sum over instantons, we have to restrict a either to 0, either to the range from 0 to R0, or to the range from R0 to infinity. Okay, so our choice will be from R0 to infinity. And the physical explanation is that this theory, to define this theory, okay, you have to introduce the cutoff. You, at the end, you eliminate the cutoff, but you have to put some cutoff for, in the theory. Now, and therefore, it makes little sense to consider instantons of smaller size than the size of the cutoff. So, of course, cutoff will be much less than R0. I mean, length in, I mean, 1 over cutoff will be much less than R0. Therefore, if we consider this range, then it perfectly makes sense because all instantons will be bigger than the scale of the cutoff. So, moreover, each such configuration, if we consider it, if we just take this constant solution and consider it in flat space, so we plug in, so this is a stereographic factor that maps sphere onto the plane, flat plane, then it is obvious that such instanton breaks translations, of course. It breaks dilations because it has A inside, and of course, special conformal generator. So it breaks all these generators. However, it preserves, of course, rotations of the three-dimensional plane. So these are L mu nu. And it also preserves this combination of translation and special conformal transformation. So, therefore, we have precisely the six generators which correspond to O4. Therefore, if you think about this instanton, the holographic dual of this instanton in the bulk are precisely the Kalman-DeLucia bubbles that we discussed before, because they are also invariant under O4, and we have in principle lots of these solutions in the bulk on the ADS side. Okay. So, but the question is whether so we have to sum, of course, over all these instantons, over all these sizes, and the question is whether infinite, the fact that there are infinite number of such instantons indicates that we have infinite instability rate.
So is this the same thing here, or is it different?
Well, when you, it's true that when we now evaluate the factors, but the, you mean the, when you say the factor, you mean the volume of the moduli space, right?
Maybe I see what you do next.
Yeah. So if so, yeah, this is true.
So we should just check in the field theory, these different instantons correspond to running.
I can't hear you. What you're.
I'm sorry. In the field theory, these instantons correspond to running from the top of the hill down to somewhere down and back up.
Well, on the field theory side, I would say this is what they describe. So this is the potential. Okay. So you have all these tunnelings from one side to the other. Okay. This is what they describe. Or in flat space picture, so this is the potential, and what they describe, they correspond to the so-called Fubini instantons. Okay, Fubini instantons which describe tunneling of the field from the top of the potential to some value, and then rolling. Okay, so this is what they describe. Of course, usually when we say instanton, well, we bear in mind some solutions of classical equations of motion. So here, these are classical equations alone, but of the effective action, so the, including quantum corrections. Okay. So for each, so these instantons again, I would say it in a different way. These instantons are all constant up to Weyl transformation. And the theory is conformal. Therefore, we can to evaluate Gaussian fluctuations around this instanton, it is enough to consider one of them. All of them will be the same. And the constant instanton is the simplest one. So if you do it for constant instanton, so we just take a constant solution and we find, compute, evaluate Gaussian fluctuations around this constant solution of this non-local effective action, then it turns out that you can still diagonalize this effective action, these fluctuations in terms of spherical harmonics on the sphere. And then you find, we find precisely four zero modes that are associated with L equals 1 harmonic in on three-dimensional sphere. The degeneracy of L equals 1 is precisely 4. So these 4 correspond to 3 translations and 1 dilation. And we have also, so all we have, we get also one negative mode associated with homogeneous L equals 0 mode. Okay, but this is clear because if the potential, if we sit here, so the fluctuations are negative, of course, in this direction. So we get one negative mode associated with homogeneous, and all the rest have positive, are positive modes. So therefore, instability is associated only with this homogeneous mode. This is something that is special about this model, because if you consider standard, say, Coleman scenario, then the negative mode is not homogeneous. Okay, so therefore, to evaluate the partition function, we have to sum, of course, over zero mode. So this is the sum over all locations U points to the location of the instanton, so we have to sum over all locations of the instanton on the sphere, and over all sizes. Okay, all instantons will have the same Euclidean action, therefore we will have the same Euclidean prefactor, e to the power minus the value of the Euclidean action of the instanton. So, and then we have to, of course, integrate over homogeneous mode and over the rest from L equals 2 to infinity. And then we have some action, some fluctuation action. Okay, so to get this fluctuation action, we just have to, again, find the quadratic fluctuations around the given instanton. So here we do not have observed the rho dependence on rho, just because rho is algebraic field, so you can, of course, integrate it out. And to ensure convergence, of course, the only problematic mode is the homogeneous mode. It has some, it is negative, so it diverges. So this, so to ensure convergence, you would say, okay, let us do this rotation of the homogeneous mode. So we replace S bar by I S bar. Okay. So the motivation why we can do it, first of all, why to do it, first is just because we do saddle point, right? We consider saddle point. So we explicitly think about some complex field, we complexify our potential. So, and therefore, usually, and of course, we will always have, for saddle point, this is why we call it saddle points, because we will always have some direction where the potential potential decreases, or the direction where the potential increases or decreases, so it's saddle point. And usually what we need to do, we need to just define a contour of steepest descent to deform our contour such that we go such that to ensure rapid convergence of the integral. Okay. So, but well, we have to make sure that we did not destroy our boundary condition. So we did not. There is a possibility to destroy the contour in this way. So first thing to worry about is that by after this rotation, we might get complex partition function, which is of course bad. But if we analyze the fluctuation, the Gaussian fluctuation of rho q, okay, so then we have this rho bar in front, and this rho bar is negative on the solution. This is the solution at the saddle point, and it is negative. Therefore, to ensure again convergence, you have to both rotate S and rho simultaneously, and this ice cancel at the Gaussian level, of course.
Isn't this description of S a little bit non-local? I mean, if I choose regions in a manifold, and look at the average value of S in the two regions, it's like you're taking some of the average values to be imaginary, but different to be real.
Yeah, so you say that it may lead to, say, if I consider some high order corrections, it may lead to some imaginary.
No, I'm a bit troubled by it. So I'm okay with the formula of integration contour.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit troubled having a description which is not law. Should I be troubled? I don't know, maybe.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. I understand why it should be, why it can be non-local at the end.
I mean, you have a field, you decompose it in Fourier modes.
Yes.
Then you take some
remotes,
imagine some real.
Ah, well, this
is local, I think. Remotes using formation.
Yes, but at the end, what you have to take care of that you have to make sure that your path integral at the end is real. Then
I would have a locality. I mean, if you want to use a steepest descent contour,
yes.
you should use a steepest descent contour for all the modes, just use the action, the whole action.
Yes, but when I think about steepest descent here in this context, so as you said, I decompose it in the Fourier modes, and then I have a plane for each mode, right? And then I have to choose the steepest descent for each mode. So I did just.
If you do that and use the whole action for that, then it will be local.
Yes,
doing steepest descent for the whole function S.
Yes. So what? Okay. So.
But
so
doing just for S bar and not for that.
Okay. Okay. So first of all. I will justify it in a moment why this is self-consistent. But but first of all, we agree that if we sit at some local maximum, so at the saddle point, right? Then we have to we have to follow some direction in the field space, in the infinite dimensional field, but such as the contour, you know, overall contour corresponds to steepest descent, right? So we can do it using, say, the flow, right? The Morse flow. What I mean is that.
Yeah, I understand. So there will be a team ball associated.
Yeah, so and then this Morse flow will build some hypersurfaces in this infinite dimensional field space, and this is the hypersurface over which I integrate, I define my path integral. Okay. So in this case, so what I will mention it in a moment that if you do this, okay. So suppose you want to pursue this prescription of this Morse flow. Which defines this hyper surface. So it is clear that high order modes will be, if you do this decomposition, high order modes are always, the action depends at least quadratically in high order modes. So if you want to consider some particular direction on this hyper surface, direction which corresponds to the flow of homogeneous mode, you can self-consistently tune or set all higher modes to zero. I mean, if you think about this Morse flow, right, then the right-hand side will always contain these high-order modes in spherical harmonics. And if you set them to zero, then you just find one particular direction on this hypersurface, right, or the one particular direction which corresponds to the homogeneous mode. And this is what actually I want to consider.
Okay. So the whole integral is done on this box,
yes.
On this box flow.
Yes. So the concept is just, you see, the problem is that it is very difficult. I mean, it's very difficult set of equations. You can solve them or study them in full generality. So what we observed here is that a homogeneous mode is a problematic one. So and it has this feature that it decouples from the rest, self-consistently decouples from the rest, because action is always contains higher order. I mean, depends at least quadratically on higher order modes. And therefore, we will treat in a moment in full generality this zero mode just because it can be decoupled. But I agree that in general, this is if you take some other mode, it will not work. It will lead to some non-locality. So of course, so I have to specify what this sum, how this sum looks like. So of course, sum over the U over the location of the instantons correspond to integral over the three-dimensional sphere, and the sum over the size of the instantons is just given by just integral over dA. So we choose here dA over A because this is scale invariant measure. And clearly, you have to also include the norms of the zero modes. So this is basically the standard prescription of Coleman, what we are doing here. For instance, we have four zero modes, three translations, and one dilation. So to get them, what you need to do, you just take the one particular solution, and you differentiate it with respect to A or with respect to translations on the sphere. This is how you get this zero modes. Okay, and then you evaluate their norms, so these are the norms. So, an unfortunate thing about this dilation mode, it is finite on a sphere, but if you try to evaluate the norm of this dilation mode in flat space, that is, if you take R0 to infinity, then the norm diverges. So on a sphere, therefore, if you ask me to define this mode, the theory in flat space, you will have to find a prescription how to make the dilation mode finite in the flat space. Okay. So now, this is what we. Currently discussed a little bit with Davide. So since higher harmonics occur at least quadratically in the action, they to analyze the structure of the contour in this infinite dimensional field space, to analyze the structure along the direction of the homogeneous mode, you can self-consistently set all high-order modes to zero and analyze just the homogeneous part of the path integral. So then, this is how the path integral looks like. You can just, the integral overall just becomes an area function. So you get area function, and then you have of S bar, and then you have some extra piece from the functional determinant. And now you can, this is just analysis of integral, simple, usual standard integral, and you can do it, of course. In the large n limit, this area function has this nice exponential form, and we can just plot the log of the absolute value of the integrand. So this is the contour plot. So the dark region corresponds to negative values, and the bright region corresponds to positive mode. So we have this saddle point here. This is precisely this maximum. Okay. So this is the real axis here. Okay. And we have to go in the imaginary direction. And the contour happens to be completely symmetric about the real axis. And therefore, this integral, because of the symmetry, and because the function, the integrand, is real on the
What are the axes?
So this is the complex S bar plane. So real S bar and imaginary S bar.
Okay.
So this is S bar.
So you haven't done the S bar integral.
Yes, it is not. So now I have to specify what should be the integral over S bar to guarantee convergence. And this is again I have to remind where I started. I started from the beginning from mentioning that we can choose contours for O and S such that path integral converges. This is what is important. Okay. So the contour for rho, for instance, here for rho is chosen such that this is indeed Airy function. Okay, so this contour for rho is corresponds to the Airy function contour. And contour for S bar then is given by this is how it looks like. So we have to go in the imaginary direction, but it is symmetric around the real axis, and the function is real on the real axis, therefore this integral will be real. By Schwarz reflection principle. Okay. So at the end, we can evaluate this Gaussian fluctuations. So they diverge just because of each integral converges, of course, but this product diverges, and you have to cut the product. Once you cut the product, you have this explicit cutoff dependence, of course. And there is only A appears here because this is the only scale apart from the cutoff inside the integral. And this K is closely related to the beta function. It vanishes precisely when G6 is equal to 192. Okay? So finally, we combine all together. This is the expression for the partition function. And in order to ensure that partition function is cutoff independent, we can derive the beta function for the coupling constant, sextic coupling constant, and this is the shape that you have seen before. Of course, the beta function does not change because the theory, after all, is the same theory like in flat space. We just study it on a sphere, and the beta function does not change because of that. So let me consider. So you can now consider, of course, various correlation functions. Now I have to explain why these are not appears. These are not appears because we cut the integral over A, the integral over the size of the instantons, to avoid double counting. And therefore, this by of course introducing Carnot by hand. This way, you definitely break the conformal invariance of the theory. And the only motivation why to cut this integral, why to break the scale invariance, is just because these instantons of size, as I mentioned, of size in the range between R naught and infinity, is actually equivalent to the family of instantons in the range of for A between 0 and R naught. So once we, of course, eliminate this double counting, then we have this extra scale R naught, and it pops in everywhere, in all correlators. So for instance, if we, of course, it is hard to evaluate, to estimate, to find the closed form expression for the two-point function, but you can analyze it in two interesting limits. First limit is when it corresponds to the short distance expansion, and second limit corresponds to large distance expansion, of course. On the sphere, you can't do it, so you have to analytically continue it first to the sitter. Yes. Okay, so you have to analytically continue it to the sitter, and then take the large end. Therefore, I put here quotient mark, this is after analytic continuation. So this particular behavior indicates that there is a conformally coupled scalar in the spectrum. While here, so to leading order, if we consider just leading order behavior, this gives us just the free field propagator in flat space. Of course, in flat space, because we consider short distance expansion. Now, but next to leading correction indicates that we have non-trivial web for the scalar for the operator for the mass operator phi square. Okay. And this non-trivial web is closely related to the fact that we broke the scale invariant by cutting the integral, the sum over instant over the size of the instantons, because we introduce this R naught into the problem.
So what is capital N?
this M, oh, it has to do with the solution of the gap equation. It's, you remember, I have to go back. Okay, so when you solve gap equations on a sphere of fixed size A, you have two equations. You have two equations, S bar equals G6 rho bar square, and the second equation is rho bar equals this propagator in the limit of coincident points. So, when you do evaluate it, you get, so the definition of M is just A S bar, A square S bar. So this is the definition of M plus, I think, plus 1 over 4, some formal definition, some dimensionless number.
This is like a cutoff.
This M? No, it's not like a cutoff. It's just the value of the effective mass of the field on a sphere of size A.
This is the mass of the field.
Right? Yes, effective, because you see you sum over all these masses. So it's some dimensionless, indeed I had to put the definition, dimensionless quantity. So, okay, so at the end, what is the conclusion? Let me conclude here. So the conclusion is that we have the same problem in the field theory, in the weak gauge coupling regime. We have all these instantons, which are dual to the bubbles in the bulk. Okay, so all these instantons, if you analytically, if you take in each instanton separately and analytically continue it to Lorentzian signature, then you will find also singularity. They will be singular at some point. However, if you first sum over all of them and analytically continue after summing over all these instantons, then the theory is finite. It indicates that if we were able to do this, to carry out this computation, probably in full string theory regime, in the string regime, then we probably would find that this singularity that we are talking about in the supergravity limit is not there anymore. It's cured. Okay. So, of course. We still have to understand the behavior of a holographic dual at strong gauge coupling through understanding the bulk behavior in the Einstein gravity regime, including perturbations. Then, in principle, the ambitious goal is to understand how to propagate information across the cosmological singularity. So to understand this problem of propagating the information across the cosmological singularity, we should probably study double holographic dual through asymptotics on the AD sitter space, because after analytic continuation we have a de sitter space, and then we can think about, so this is three-dimensional de sitter, so we can think about the future boundary of the de sitter space as a sphere. And then we may find some effective conformal field theory, two-dimensional conformal field theory, and then glue up on top of this de Sitter space another copy of the de Sitter space. Okay, so we have lots of de Sitter space glued along this S2 boundary. Okay, and if we find some smooth, nice field theory description in this construction, then it may teach us about how to propagate the information across the singularity in the bulk. And of course, this is all done in some very particular, for a very particular set of boundary conditions in the bulk. And it would be interesting to understand other boundary conditions and what are the relations between them.
Remind us again how you got an Owen vector model. You know, I might have thought Owen vector model was due to some high spin theory on the gravity side, you know, we just got regular Einstein gravity. So yeah. I was just curious how the Owen vector representation of gravity.
there's lots of talk in literature about owning vectors that you do at high speed.
Okay. So of course. So the great. I can't say too much about that. Because in the context of high spin, all this high spin gravity, nothing is known about cosmological singularities, or this analysis was not done. So you may, in principle, address the question if you have well-defined O(n) vector model, and presumably it is dual. Well, we know that it is dual to high spin gravity in the bulk. Then, do this analysis in the bulk and see if both sides make sense.
I guess what I was asking is that you didn't start with high speed gravity, you started with Einstein gravity.
Yes.
And yet you ended up with an vector model. Well, it's some adjunct model, but I guess it's one of that
thing. So you ask how comes that we started from Einstein and ended with higher speed.
How can you start from Einstein gravity model that you represented some own vector model on the CFT slide? There was some story about this.
The story is that you take the gauge on the boundary, you take the gauge coupling to be precisely zero. So first of all, the gauge field decouples, and the potential, all the potential interactions between the matter fields become trivial. It is just zero. So therefore, at the end on the ABGM side, you have the Scalar fields and the triple trace deformation. This is all you have. Now, of course, this triple trace deformation is not that simple, like it's not single pi square cube, okay? But in the UV, so I would say that when you take gauge coupling to be precisely zero, you find two theories which are connected by RG flow. One theory is ABGM, triple trace deformed ABGM. Another theory is ON scalar field. And RG connects them. So in UV you have this ON, in the IR you get this ABGM deformed by triple trace deformation. So this is the story.
So the ABGM vector?
Yes, effective in UV. Well, this ABGM in IR, when you take this ON, so the connection between ABGM and ON is precisely RG, in UV this is ON, in IR this is ABGM, this triple trace deformation.
So is there a story about why you wouldn't expect the other degrees of freedom to become important due to singularity? It seems like here we're focusing on a very specific set of degrees of freedom.
Yes, of course, it is important, of course.
There are stories to why you wouldn't expect the other degrees of freedom to play an important role in the story of how this
First of all, I do not think that the spectrum is completely trivial. It is not like only conformally coupled scalar. Indeed, when you look at the large distance expansion, you only conformally coupled scalar survives. But there are other massive modes, and the indications there are other massive modes has to do with this non-trivial phi square, expectation value of phi square. Now, but certainly you have to make the picture complete, you have to also introduce fermionic degrees of freedom to this scalar O(n) vector model. It's just less clear how to do it, but in principle you have to, of course, consider all, I mean, not only scalar field, but other fields as well.
And is the picture of all these tons being important? Should I somehow interpret that as on the bulk side, the collapse to singularity is very inhomogeneous? I mean, does that really correspond in the real space to?
No, well, I would say that in the bulk you have to also sum over all of them. This is what probably it teaches us, that you should not consider only one single solution in the bulk. So this is. Because if you do this, if you consider only one single solution in the boundary CFT, you also get singularity after an analytic continuation. However, if you sum over all of them, so you have to take all these possible bubbles and all fluctuations around each bubble, and if you sum, you probably will get something finite. At least this is what we learned from the field theory side.
On both sides, we do have field theories with Hamiltonians which are a matter of love, yes.
Hamilton, I'm not sure I know how to define Hamiltonian in this theory. This is, I don't know.
Okay, I thought this was the
original. After, in the beginning, of course, it is well defined.
Sure.
But after you do this deformation, I have to scratch my head hard to say something about Hamilton.
What's the problem? At least I thought this was the original story, and I wasn't sure what you guys.
Because I do not know. You see, all the analysis was done in the space of auxiliary fields. Then you have to first of all translate it into the space of what actually we did, what is done in the scalar field, right? And okay,
but you should be able to say that just from the original Lagrangian that we started.
Well, original Lagrangian is 5 to the 6, right? Now, but we did some manipulations, right, with the contours, right, with the pass integral contours. Of course, we manipulated with auxiliary fields, but it definitely has some impact on the scalar field, right?
Yeah, I would hope that's so. Okay, we should probably discuss later.
Yes, so I do not know. So this is why I'm not sure if I know or understand.
Well,
I'm
just out of the concern, and then we can discuss later. But
okay.
I thought this was the original story as to how we got the singularities in ADS. To begin with, you take it, you have this information, you make it unbound from below, so you run into the singularity. And then my concern with this has always been, at that point, I expect an instability of a highly inhomogeneous form of quantum mechanics nucleating positive energy plus negative energy regimes. So the question here is, do you have some stories to why you expect these particular instantons to be the dominant thing?
Because they are spherically symmetric. So if you consider non-spherically symmetric instantons, they will have higher energy or higher Euclidean energy.
In these kinds of theories, I think it's pretty clear that's probably not true.
This is our if you want assumption. We do not have a proof of that fact, but the logic is the following: if you have spherically symmetric configurations, they have less energy or smaller Euclidean action than deform configurations. Okay, you say you doubt if this is true.
In theories where you have a Hamiltonian which is unbounded from below, then I think it's pretty clear that's taking us on. If your theory was bounded from below, then sure.
Yes, but after deformation, I would say that it is unbounded from below, because if it is all the time unbounded from below, then it did nothing, right? Then you still have a sick theory.
I think we're doing, we can discuss this later. We're great.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's good. I'm going to bring back things up here. So, thank you very much, Major.